ever anything could end. Don't try to fight it, don't try to save me. She's a woman with gloves.
The Muskie 360 Podcast, Jaybird.
360 in the house,
she's
Steve.
She's a woman with grubs.
She's a woman with grubs.
Oh, my goodness.
She let the little fish go.
That's a song about a shoplifter Jay murdered this week. Woman stealing grubs. We don't play at the Muskie Shop, folks. You want to stuff your shorty shorts full of grubs, Jay will shoot you in the head.
Yeah, put them back, put them down. No need for that.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Baby, don't do it. Don't do it. Anyway, goodness gracious. There'll be no violence. But anyway, Jay, you have been out. You have been playing pseudo guide. You got family up there. What are you seeing in the North Woods? What's going on? You're pounding, grinding, grinding, pounding. You're like a mojito in guacamole. What's going on with the grind?
Seen a few fish. We're fishing early afternoon type thing before dinner and after the rain ends every morning. So kind of like ducking out in between rainstorms. We got a lot coming, so it's going to be some interesting timing involved. Man, I'm telling you what. Getting on some different lakes for change, right? This week, wow, weed growth is phenomenal this year.
Smitty was saying like a month ago, he's like, yeah, there's 6 feet of weeds. I mean, it just never died. Yeah.
Oh man, on a lake today, not dark water, but it's certainly not clear water. And there's incredibly tall weeds growing in 11 feet of water. I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
So, yeah, got that going. Hitting some supper clubs, hitting some supper clubs for Father's Day, and it's all good.
How disappointed was your dad today? No change, or the same level of disappointment?
No,
for the last
he was fine. Yeah, he's 40 fine.
40-some plus years. Yeah,
I think we went to like Eddie B's Northwoods Pines White Spruce Hilltop Inn or something like that.
That name sucks. That's way too long, man.
It's a mouthful. Well, it's a Northwoods name. So it's in Eagle River. So, of course, and it was very good. And, of course, the whole family's with me. So we're like, well, let's check the entire place for Elmer, because there's a good shot he's here or has been here. But no sign of him.
Been drinking there all day.
Well, the dinner rolls there are just absolutely phenomenal. So, there you have it.
If you live up north, you got to check your dumpster for Elmer at night. If you throw out dinner rolls, he's like a raking.
He loves those things.
Like he's like a little raccoon bandit. It's ridiculous. I mean, he's banned from most supper clubs in the North Woods for obvious reasons, right?
Elmer knows everything about every supper club in the Tri-County region, and I am not exaggerating. Well, it's incredible.
Literally,
jokingly, if
I need to find somewhere to eat after we get off the water, I just call Elmer. Hey, I'm on this lake. What's the closest thing? Turn left.
What are their hours? Right, he'll know every little detail.
We were in Eagle River that one night, and we went to that kind of swanky place, and Elmer was like, yeah, go over there. We went over there. There you have it. Here very shortly, we will be swanking it up together, Jay.
You mean you're coming to the Northwoods?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just a matter of days. It's scary. I looked on my calendar. I was like, holy crap. It feels like I just left. The suffering never ends. Get to hang out with you. Neighbor Steve.
Neighbor Steve.
The hog blaster himself. Neighbor Steve just popped a big PB this week.
Yeah, on a
safety pin spinner bait and gonna go out there, and we'll have some reports here shortly on what's going on there. Obviously, you got the reports from Krieger, if you're doing that. Jay, something that's coming up here very shortly. I mentioned it before. We kind of teased it. Danny Herbeck, Jamie Bastilli, here very shortly, they're going to be doing a Canada musky fishing report for us on the app. Right?
Okay.
So, little podcast thing, 20, maybe 30 minutes max of what they're seeing. Both of them are guides. So one of them, Danny, is on Eagle, right? Jamie Pistilli is all the way over on the French River system, that neck of the woods. They're covering the whole range of where you need to see. What you need to see.
That's really cool. I didn't know that.
I thought I told you that, but I sometimes I have a Pepsi or 40. So we're going to have a little blip from them every week, basically through the major part of muskie season. So Danny Herbeck, that's Steve Herbeck's son. Can't get much better than that. You know, he probably, Herbeck probably, knowing Herbeck, Herbeck's still hiding stuff from him.
He came in a few days ago, earlier this week.
And yeah, and what did he buy? More, what? He bought what? Krakens. Yeah, that's what's up, baby.
Bet he did. He did buy and replacement tails and
That's what's up. Anyway, I'm teasing. But you know, Herbeck's told me Danny has passed him years back. I mean, and me and Steve are friends. It's like that weird father son dichotomy. It's Father's Day. It's a great day to mention it. But you know, Steve Herbeck told me, he said Danny passed me a few years back and he's teaching me things and he understands musky fishing on the Canadian Shield like no other. Add that in with Jamie Pistilli from Rising Sun Charters, who's over on the eastern part of the musky habitat range. So we're covering all points in between for the, with a little musky report for Canada. If you're heading up to Canada, it's going to be great, right? I'll be up there this summer a little bit, up there fishing and filming. I'll definitely get with these guys, so we'll be able to give you guys a little bit of a heads up before you head to Canada, whether it be Lake of the Woods or French River or wherever. You're going to have a clue of what's popping. Jay, what's popping? Just keep going till you come up with a word.
Yep. Well, Tony, what's your report, Steve? How's fishing been this week?
I killed an Ewok.
What?
So, shot him right out of the tree, Jay.
Ooh, oh, okay.
I was high on PCP. I thought it was an Ewok. It's actually a homeless guy.
It's legal down there,
it's
right?
Legal, yeah. We're in homeless person season. So he was wearing a headscarf. He looked like that Ewok from Return of the Jedi. Shot him right between the eyes. Anyway, we are encroaching upon the end of the musky southern kind of thing. If you got some moving water, it's still kind of cold. You know, krakens are smacking, some double-bladed stuff. It's good. Definitely some open water trolling. I got a cool text from a good buddy of mine today, a little bit south of me, and he smacked a really good one with his son today. So congrats to you, Sean. There's some options, but we're kind of gussying up. By the time it fires up there, we're done down here. So headed your way for the continuation of Ewok season, Jay. Sorry.
Nice recap. Interesting recap, but it was nice.
Yeah, listen, this ain't my first rodeo here. This ain't my first can crack, baby. Hold on. I've been behaved for too many weeks, Jay. I've been on best behavior. No more, folks. No more. It's time to unleash the beast. And let's unleash what's new at the shop this week. Anything interesting, new stuff? Do we have everything? Is like the end of new stuff showing up done? Or what's going on with baits right now at the shop?
Yeah, I mean, it's never really done because we get surprised all the time with stuff or, inquiries we've made, sometimes take a year to
really like come forth. 4 years later, it's like,
yeah, it's weird. But for the most part, I don't see any true surprises coming in the next week or two. But, we got a ton of stuff in this week. It's all restocks like, your weekly maps and Booker and Suic and all that stuff, busy time of the year.
I talked to Don at Figure Eight. Oh my goodness, I'm looking around. So Tailgaters sold out of the Goblin King, sold out of Daisy Duke,
Said he'd have them done, I think, by Tuesday or something like that. So we might have them by Wednesday.
So the Primo cars, I'm telling you, goodness gracious, they're gone, boys. Just a handful. I'm looking right now at the inventory. Don will be back in stock with those very shortly. He is diligently making the Tailgaters. Those are coming back in stock. What do we got? Meat Grinder. We got Goblin King. I think we got all the Meat Grinders. Dudes, I'm telling you, it is just about meat, especially with all the weeds up there. Super Meat Grinder season. It's going to be good. What else do we have here? Something that's coming into season, Jay. It's the time of the season for Topwater very shortly.
Yes.
What's your name? Who's your daddy? It's Father's Day. Is he a bitch like me? Anyway, we're getting there very shortly. It's the time of the season for Topwater where it becomes super relevant. We got the cannonballs, the little bastards. What's the inventory looking like on Fat B?
Decent. We have a bunch.
Dr. Evil. I'm trying to think of things that are relevant, guys. If you're thinking about baits, stock up, load up. All black Dr. Evil, that doesn't suck. Black and orange, my favorite, it's gone. Baby Duck. Yeah, black on black, just move on.
Just got a bunch more top raiders in too.
For the Dr. Evil.
I think we're gonna those.
I just read a thing on the App Jay this week. Actually today, when I got off the water about like beginner baits. Absolutely, like you have no clue. You don't even know what a muskie looks like up close. Of just the simplest of simple baits, right? Kind of like just a people have asked. We get so many emails at the app, and it was just like, okay, this is your cousin Lloyd that eats potatoes raw for breakfast, right? He could catch a muskie doing this. Top Raiders on there. That bait just works. You know, you have so many options of straight retrieve baits, and that's one of them. I mean, it's kind of a classic that I think gets taken for granted now with the top raider. I mean, you go, it's worked. It always worked. It will continue to work, you know.
And you don't have to worry about tuning it.
No, that's a thing. Nice little advantage. I mean, something I'll say about, and I'm pulling up right now here on the app. I mean, if you're listening to Musky podcasts, this is probably beneath you. In writing it, I kept it kind of like super simple way. Steve's Meat Grinder, Titan, like the whole thing I'm doing as a guide where I'm going, okay, I got a dude that can barely stand up and I've got a chimpanzee wearing a muskie shot hoodie. We have to catch one, right? What can we do? And so this is like kind of my guide list of things that no matter what you do, right, you could catch a fish, and top raiders on there. It's kind of just a concept, Jay, where it's like, okay, let's take it down to just bare bones musky stupidity. What can we do? And top raider, throw it out. And like you said, the tuna, I was looking at it, I was going, okay, we're kind of we're encroaching on the core of topwater season because water temps right now are, excuse me, going up for me. What are you seeing on the lakes right now when you're fishing Suckatobin or Turtobogan?
Mid-60s generally.
Wow.
They haven't warmed up a lot. We've had a lot more cool weather. It rained all morning. Soren and I got on the lake by 11 o'clock, only had a few hours before hitting the supper club, and it was 65 degrees out.
Did you feel cloudy? Did you feel shame that you couldn't catch him a fish, Jay?
Yeah.
Yeah, you should. Anyway,
yeah.
Your uncle sucks, Soren.
So shameful. I was, you were talking about the beginners thing there, and I was thinking, you know, I haven't read your article. I saw it just before we went, you know, we went on the air here, Steve. And the thumbnail looks beautiful, by the way.
Well, it's not, like I said, I'm not propping the article, but like this is the time where a lot of people are like, okay, we're going musky fishing. And these are just my top 10 baits of a monkey could work them, right?
Sure.
Eep, eep. Who's got the cheese to the Jeep?
Well, what I was thinking of is that you being a guide and, you know, the best guides out there are going to realize someone's capabilities and kind of make a assumption that certain baits are going to work no matter what. You know, obviously you get on the water, you're like, you know you're doing all your readings, you know, you're checking the water, you're trying to read the water because every day is different, and it's like, okay, yeah, you know what, today might be a shallow thing and let's start with some blades, you know, or whatever it is.
You get
so you're like, you got to get the right baits for these people, and that's probably not easy.
My boat, double pounder. every day.
So you throw out the torture is what you're doing, no matter what.
Listen, if you get them to tap out in the first 30 minutes, you're home free.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know, double tail pounders. Oh, we better downsize, put on the pounder.
And you're up there going, work them faster.
That thing better be bulging, boys. You just watch somebody's grandpa go, frick, boys, they're life flighting them off my boat once a week. No, I bring this up and I kind of pointed to that little fluff thing I wrote because a lot of us are about to run into the time where we're all pseudo guides. And that's what Jay's doing right now. You know, you got your family trip on, you know, Suckatobin or, you know, you're over on Munchie Tobin. I'm just making up names, Jay.
Clearly.
You know, but we run into these things where the guy driving the boat, right? You're running the family trip. That's July or August. It's coming up here shortly. Grandpa Jones wants to catch a muskie. What do we do? That's kind of a refocus kind of article for the dumbest of the dumb kind of baits. But also, too, every bait on that is freaking awesome. And you said top raiders. The only reason I'm bringing it up because top raiders, I mean, a fat bastard, you can get the tail out of tune. You can.
Yeah.
Catch a fish, tail's out of tune. It's not tempered. You get a great sounding freaking top raider, it's not coming out of tune. I like them both. Different animals. I'm going to put my girlfriend's uncle's brother's lover on a top raider, right? Throw it out, turn the tail, right? Reel it in. Same thing. I talk about Steve's meat grinder and that. Where that bait came from, Jay, do you know, like you and I have talked about it. Guiding is a hellscape in of itself sometimes, right? People have very high expectations, but they have very low skill. That is fine. That is not a judgment. I'm being as honest as I can on the podcast. We have people with 50-inch aspirations with bluegill skill. What do I got to do? How do I make their target meet their skill level? The freaking meat grinder's like, okay, well, I've taken away most of the weed fouling. I've taken away the big thump versus double blades. I mean, that short list on that freaking thing is not a double blade thing where you'd be shocked. You take your, you know, like I said, your cousin Eddie's boyfriend's girlfriend's mother-in-law out and stick her on double tens and she'll screw it up. So if you're playing guide, and a lot of us are going to end up doing this summer, you're pseudo guiding, you're the best musky guide of the family, think about some of these baits to help dial in the people that you're pseudo guiding on that little family junket for the weekend, or like Jay's doing. You're going, listen, you can't put Jay's nephew, and he's a great kid, but you can't put him on a freaking, you know, a Weagle on the first cast, or put him on, you know, a Red October. You know what I'm saying, Jay? Where it's like, okay, we need something that's going to trigger fish in the easiest methodology we can get. So that's something to look at.
Yep, whatever. I agree. Yeah.
Whatever. I just like coming up with like the family corollaries, like uncle's brother's boyfriend's lover. What do you got? Yes,
you did a good job. Well, I was wondering, what is the one phrase you always say after you give that top water, whether it's a top raider or a fat bee, to your client and they start reeling in? What is the one first phrase that always comes to mind as a suggestion that you put their way?
Leave me alone. I'm going to pass out.
Nope.
Oh,
slow it down a little. Down. Am I right? Am I right? Because everyone tends to overcrank those and the whole body's turning, you know?
Usually I go, hey, can you drive the boat back? I'm teasing. by the time I've given up to Toppler, hey, you ever trailered a 22 footer? Now think about cringy things I did in my teenage years.
Just get it kind of straight on there. Don't worry about it.
Just whatever, man. I sleep here. Don't worry about me. buddy. I'm having a good day. It's Father's Day. Thinking about the dad. How is your dad, Jay?
He's awesome.
Your dad is how old now?
He's 88.
Goodness gracious. He fled Germany and went to Argentina in, what, 45?
No. No, he was... No, he missed World War II.
Sorry.
He was born in the late 30s, so, he's technically a Korean War veteran, though. Very so cool. He did the Badger Honor Flight. He was wearing his little Badger the Honor Flight get-up tonight, so that was a really cool thing that he did, I think about 2 years ago. It's just, he was blown away at the entire experience. I mean, the standing ovation that he got at the airport when he landed at 10:30 at night or something, there's hundreds of people there just lying down and they're all cheering. And it's just like, you know, pretty emotional.
I know it's awesome. So what a different time, you know? So you're a lucky man to have your dad around Father's Day. I'm not going to I think of muskie fishing and I think of fathers. It's kind of a day for me, you know, you just go, what do you do? Drink more. Yeah. That's what he would have done, Jay. Anyway, I don't know what we were saying, but I'll get there, which is the skill level. I think we're going there, which is like skill level versus bait application. How do we get the most out of a low skill angler, right? And get them connected.
Or low experience angler.
Well, and it's not,
that's the thing. It's just like, Soren's pretty darn good. Sixteen-year-old, you know, athletic dude, you know, baseball star. I mean, you know, no slouch, and you know, he's got the energy to go. as long as you want to be out there, he'll fish, you know, which is great, you know, to see drive out of a kid, you know, like that. So, but, you know, like you said, he's never thrown a 10-inch weagle, I imagine, you know, so that would take a little bit of, but he could get it. He could do it. He could do it.
Right. He could do it. But we've got to get people on par. And I think that's where I'm going. Like the Jodester was out with me this week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jody's got her own boat. We're out there smacking. We're throwing all these different baits. Where can we get someone on the same page as the muskies? I was just talking about the meat grinder for us. Kind of changed course there, which was like, okay, it's not going to foul in the weeds. It's going to thump pretty much 98% of the time. That's a score, right? Mm-hmm, the top raider. Mm-hmm. You know, here's your brother's uncle's girlfriend's possum trainer, right? And he plays with the tail. It's not going to come out of tune. That's why I go with top raider. Keep it basic. Keep it straight retrieve. And then as your quote-unquote pseudo guide, right? You got the family weekend trip. You got the 4th of July coming up. You got whatever.
Yeah.
Uncle Larry's carpet layer lover is you got to put him on a fish. Keep it basic, but sort of stick that list would be pretty smart there.
You're putting them on proximity. That's nothing to worry about. That's nothing to think twice about.
Yeah, I mean,
when they get a little nervous, like they can't see weeds anymore, you know, you can kind of sense that a little bit. But the boat control is keeping it.
That's when you look them in the eye and say, we're structure fishing. Just lie to them. That's a guide's number. No, we're fishing structure. No, you just drifted off 20 feet. I don't even know it's a family holiday, right? Which means I ordered a 24 pack and two large pizzas. What you're saying is so on brand, where everyone's coming up to the Northwoods, you're getting from Canada, and it's family, and somebody's the boat driver, right? Whoever's driving the boat and whoever's kind of leading the charge with the game plan, your job as a pseudo guide, and I like this, we just ended up here organically, but if you're like the chief on the boat, right, you're the guide. Proximity to the edges we're fishing or proximity to the cover / structure we're fishing becomes paramount, right? Good boat control catches muskies. It simply does, right? How much space do we have to close the deal? How much space are we moving a muskie off, say, a weed edge before we're in the figure eight? Determining that is kind of like the ninja move outside of putting, you know, your boyfriend's, barber's, tailor's, girlfriend's, uncle, pet trainer on a straight retrieve bait.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have good boat control if we're playing pseudo guide during that peak season, right? So say, you know, we're on a bucktail bite, just straight retrieve, whatever, or a spinnerbait bite. If you're too far off the edge because you don't have faith in your boat control, your family members, your buddies, your friends, whatever, they're not hitting where they need to be to engage a fish. If you're too tight, it's like they might move one and they've got 20 feet before it's in a figure eight. And guess what they're going to do, Jay? They're going to screw the figure eight up every time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? Asking your spouse or your uncle or your girlfriend's mother's cousin's, you know, hairdresser to do a good figure eight is diminishing returns. Right? So if you're playing that game, split the difference and think about it that way. I don't know how we got down the rabbit hole, but that's so relevant. I guess it's what you're doing right now. And I see so many people are like groups that are, you know, they're headed to Canada or they're headed to the North Woods where it's like their musky trip of the year, you know?
Sure.
And they're going to whatever. They're going to the Manny Chain or they're going Three Lakes. And it's one dude is kind of like the boat driver, boat launcher. He's the guide. You just are. You're the guide. On that tip, something to think about is the dichotomy of presentations in a boat at the same time, right? So if you're looking for a pattern, you're playing pseudo guide here in the next couple weeks, or your trip with your buddy. And that's so normal, right, Jay? I mean, there's a little bit of pressure. Like, you call up, you know, what's your buddy down there,
yeah,
Madison?
I mean, absolutely. Think about that. I think most people that fish every once in a while, try to fish once a month or more, have been in that situation.
Right.
Good thing to talk about.
You've got a lifelong friend down there in Madison. Yeah, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. You know, props to him. But
yeah, Brandon. Yeah. Brandon, yeah. Right. I'm guiding him. There's pressure there. Right. It's just like, I want him to
put
have
me on
a good
fish,
time
asshole.
To catch
yeah.
fish. Yeah, absolutely.
And or you know, it's back in the day. I mean, I was going through the photo albums last year. It's like, you know, here's a bunch of pictures of you and your YouTube buddy. You know, come up here and we'll do this.
Oh,
or go down there. Or I'll freaking whatever. He's a tool, but you would look at that relationship where if you call your buddy and we're going out and you're going on your boat and your water, you're a guide, right? He might just mm-hmm. bring in a six pack, but what do we do to make that fundamentally happen? I really didn't have a direction for this, but when we started, but I think it's merited us. What can we do to make this happen as quickly as possible for a musky angler that has a lower skill level than ourselves? That's the question. Let's start there. First and foremost, good boat control. Understand the seasonality of musky. So what's your first job in the beginning of the day, Jay? What have you been doing? Mark forage is at shallow, mid, or deep, mm-hmm. first and foremost. Secondly, make a bait selection that takes exceptionally low skill but has the appropriate running depth.
Yep.
Right? So if they're on top, I mean, if I got a, if you're on my boat, we might throw fat bees. If I got, like I said, your cousin's hairdresser's, you know, dog groomer on my boat, Let's put her on a top rider so she doesn't play with the tail.
God, you know a lot of people.
I know them all. So a top rider, because the tail won't come out of tune, is monkey proof, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to make the determination. First rule of the game, shallow, mid, or deep. What presentations are directly hitting the zone we muskies to be in, running above them but not below them? Right. So is it blades, spinner baits, top water, you know, mid-level crank baits, a shallow jerk baits, or is it like deep probative baits, bulldogs, krakens, medusas? Right. You got to make that determination, make it quickly, or you look like an idiot. Now you're a guide. Right. Because the second you got Cousin Eddie's freaking bookie on your boat, right? You wanna make sure you show them a fish. So make that determination based on bait fish as quickly as possible, and then make your bait selection based upon something that someone can turn the handle and musky on in, right? Real stop or straight retrieve? That becomes the question. So that's kind of that pseudo guiding thing if you're leading the charge on a musky trip or a family trip.
Weight of the bait too, ease of casting distance without backlash issues. That's another thing, like really light bucktails that flare up a lot. You know, you got any kind of wind, which we do every day. You know, bad choice. Something that casts like a bullet.
Yes, yep. Yes.
You know,
that is an interesting, and again, self-serving. I didn't even think we'd talk about that piece. It's kind of like clickbaity or dumb, but it's self-serving. But the reason I went with instead of like a 500 Booker tail or a 700 or like a single blade was it's kind of hard to goober up a spinnerbait, right? And they got the weight to cast. If you're guiding, you know, your boyfriend's, girlfriend's, lover's, ex-cop, you want to make sure that you don't have the tiniest giant killer or aglia or something that's super light because now it's bird's nest city.
Yeah.
Also, too, you know, I had a group, Jody was out with me this week, where we went 2 full days, right? 2 boats, no bird's nests.
Nice.
Set the tensioner knob on the side of the reel appropriate for your guests, first and foremost. If you switch baits, you should be able to free spool and that bait slowly falls from the rod tip, right? So put a new bait on, click it in free spool. If it falls really fast, guess what's going to happen with the low skill angler? Bird's nest. If it falls slowly or at a moderate pace, you're in the money, right? You can't go, and I think a lot of guys will be like, oh, I'm taking, you know, my girlfriend Jessie's, you know, buffalo trainer, and I'm going to put it on the smallest bait I have. Well, that's going to end up into a bird's nest situation. You want a little heft. You want a little weight to a bait, a la a spinnerbait or a top rate or something with some chunk to it, but nothing like egregious as, say, a pound or a magdog.
Yeah, exactly. The opposite end of the spectrum. If it's too heavy, if it's 5-6 ounces or more, that has it's just completely negative for the average weekend kind of fisherman. It's just too much.
Well, it's too heavy. If you've never hooked them, stay away from glide baits. You know, I mean, this is just me a fight, but we're kind of down the rabbit hole. A lot of dudes are about to have to do this. 4th of July, we're going out. Well, I mean, think about it, dude. How many guys have their boat and you're geared up for 4th of July and you're sucked into like taking somebody you don't want in the boat?
Yeah, you put them on. How many times have you put someone on a Suic, you know, aka like a Titan, you know, just a simple diverized, like easiest one base.
And I talk about that
they
with
don't
the
look
Titan.
Like they're doing much. I've literally had people go, that's the dumbest looking, or you know, they'll say something like that. It's like, you just kind of trust me on this one.
And they get
really
cranked
catch
on.
Fish.
That I talked about the Titan in that little write up where I was like, real stop. It does something, you know, but spinner baits, top waters, that's going to help you out a lot in the grand scheme of things, but make that determination is bait mid shell and deep and pick some very simple presentation. So you look like a superstar. So they go, you know, Uncle Jay put me on a hogasaur. There you go. Whatever. I never, you know, it's pseudo guide conversation, but it is what it is. Never thought about it. Anyway, Jay, we've got some Q&A. Let's hit this. Let's get into it. Let's get dialed in. Here comes the real trap shit, Jay. Ooh, holler at your boy. Sorry. That was ridiculous. Josh, I'm relatively new to musky fishing shenanigans. I'm going to get a bucktail bite on a shallow side of the first break. The water temp is 65 to 67. At what water temp will you start throwing top water? And if you rise a fish and get a follow, Will you hunker down on it or come back to it? If you come back later in the day, how long will you personally give it? Jay, what's your vibe on that, dude?
On water temps to start throwing surface baits?
I mean, Krieger, you know, Wisconsin's kind of like, if it bounces.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that means there's ice on the water. Don't throw surface baits. I mean, I don't get really excited about surface baits until the 70s, but you can, in a slow methodology, catch them below 70s.
I agree. You know, there's times, you know, the water temp might be in the 50s. They could be pre-spawn. I mean, if they're shallow, yeah, they can work, and they have worked in the past. So, but yeah, generally, once you start hitting a consistent 70 degree, you know, that midsummer thing, which usually, you know, by, say, 4th of July, roughly.
Right.
You know,
very soon.
Very soon. You know, the true summer pattern sets in. It's just like, go nuts. Yeah. Give them a shot.
I mean, anything below that will work. I mean, some of your slower working top waters can be effective. You know, if you're moving them on blades and you're not getting the eat in the 60s, I mean, up to 67, you could throw, say, a Fat Bastard or a Pacemaker, whatever. Throw something back on them. I'm going to probably err for a downsized bucktail if I'm getting the look, but I'm not getting the eat during those temps. Something of the ilk of a Weagle or a Jackpot or a Walk the Dog, I think, is way more applicable than a tail prop in the 60s.
Yeah. You know, okay.
Whack,
okay.
Whack, whack, pause, whack, 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 pause kind of deal. Mm-hmm. But you can do some damage there. Jay, typically, I'll let you handle this one as well. We've got to follow. How long do we give them?
Well, cast back, right? Maybe right. Twice.
The immediate one, right.
Yeah. After the immediate and then the change up, you know, you give them the second dose of something different.
Right.
We're talking size and action difference. You know, if the thing came up on a topwater, number one choice would be go back to some kind of blade option, something that's still close to that same, you know, range in the water column. So, but no, you know, don't just keep burning it over and over. Cause if, yeah, I mean, after a couple shots with going to the second bait option, no, come back to it later.
Well, meaning it could be the major, it could be the minor, it could be sunset. You could come with dynamite, your choice. There's a lot of options there on when we follow up. Change, I think, is the number one thing we're looking for, Jay. You know, for a follow-up. We move a nice fish. Did the wind direction change, right? Did something happen in the environment? Not in your brain. Well, now's the time you lick your finger and stick it there and go, I've dialed in. No, bullshit. Did something happen? Did we have a shift? Did it cloud up a bunch? You know, did we go from a east wind to a west wind? Did we go from a north south or whatever it might be? You know, or is there a major solar event? I can't even talk, Jay. It's Father's Day.
I've seen that a lot when you get kind of some dark clouds that all of a sudden roll in just for a few minutes. You know what I mean? And it's just like you notice how much darker the whole, you know, environment is.
Like when you call me, I call it dark clouds. Just the environment gets grim.
Just when sad. I call you?
Just sad.
Thanks, Steve.
Josh likes the podcast. We appreciate you. You've read her a lot more, but anyway.
Thanks, Josh.
Matt from Chicago. You guys are like my gay uncle. Sorry.
Thanks, Matt.
You guys are like my uncles I never wanted. What is your best life advice for a musky nut in his 20s looking for life advice? Not a Titan call recommendation. Just your best advice on life. Tell Jay to lay off the hog sauce before the bash. We don't need him getting a fight over Fat Freddy's wieners.
That's a true super fan right there.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that's Matt, man.
Best life advice.
Okay, number one. And I'm going out on a limb here. Leave Chicago.
Number one.
Sorry. Move to the Northwoods at some point in your life.
No. Do not do that. No. There's nothing up there for you other than alcoholism and sad. Okay. What else you got? Best life advice, what, Jay.
Best life advice for Matt? He's 22. No, I don't know what kind of work 20. He does.
It doesn't matter. You're in your 20s. You don't know what you're doing yet.
No, you don't. You got a lot of time ahead of you to make a lot of. Well, there's a lot of trips coming. I can tell Matt's going to be taking a lot of trips, probably outside of Chicagoland too. Probably headed north. You know?
Who knows?
I don't know. Maybe what do you think, Steve?
Best life advice. I mean, it's a Muskie podcast, but I'll give you my druthers. No one invites you to the party. You got to kick the door in. That'd be my advice. No matter what you do, whether it be Muskie guide or your shoe salesman, no one is going to say, here it is. Here's life. I'm going to give you, like, if somebody offers you an opportunity, it's better for them than it is for you most of the time. Right? So you've got to make your own way. Nobody's going to invite you to the dance. You just got to find your thing and you got to kick ass and you got to be just diligent about it. You know, goodness gracious, it's not a life advice podcast, but it's funny. There are weekends, there are Sundays that me and Jerry are like, oh my God, we got to do the podcast. Right? We sit here and bitch, but we do it. And we kick ass as much as we can doing it. Consistency, not giving up, and just giving it hell. And nobody's gonna hand it to you, man. You got to want it. You got to do it yourself. Sean, having watched Joe's tutorial on the Slotmaster spinnerbait, which is awesome, would it be okay to fish this lure with no leader for European pike? I just love Muskie 360. Can't get enough of it. Keep up the hard work, guys. European pike slot master, no. I mean, Jay, that's a Jay question, really. Because in the early season, you fished the, like, crap out of spinnerbaits with no leader. Talk to me about that. Have you lost any fish or pike or what's going on there with spinnerbaits?
Well, yeah, he's talking about slot masters, which are over an ounce. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, bass spinnerbaits. Mm-hmm. Something in the half ounce range is a little bit more finesse with the vibration and everything. And, uh-huh. A lot of terminal tackle on the front of that thing kind of monkeys with it a little bit. I don't enjoy that. So quite often I go no leader. Used leader, but yeah, the slot master, I would, you know, find something titanium or something extremely thin, you know, that really cuts the water and has a low, presence to it.
I can't tell you though. I mean, spinnerbait strikes for me like good ones.
Yeah.
Like they hog it. I've got them in the corner of the mouth. You know, in the gill plate. I can't tell you if it was in their mouth and we went sideways, how deep it was. Or with a northern, where we would go, did he just hog it and I got him in the side of the mouth? A lot of your spinnerbait strikes are... And that's... this is an aside, which is spinnerbaits have a really good hooking percentage.
Yeah, they do.
I don't miss a lot of fish.
On bigger fish.
Right. On dinks. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, dude, I missed like three the day before yesterday. They were dinky on topwater. Well, if I had a bass size topwater, I could catch as many 30s as I want. Who cares? Right.
Mm-hmm.
The thing for me would be, I think the big frame of a slot master, you might be okay, but just for argument's sake, 6-inch leader, or like you said, titanium or a knottable thing, might be all right. You might be good with that. So give that a try, Sean. I just can't think of the many fish that have not had just dead to rights on spinnerbaits, even beak hook, but you just can't really calibrate where the fish hit the bait. So lack of information always makes me want to have a good leader on. You don't want to lose a bait. You don't want to kill a fish. All right, Casey, can I place an order? Okay, yes. I actually emailed him back. Yes, we can do a signed book for you. There you go. Mark, when should I transition to outside edges? Is it after no follows, or is it based solely on bait fish on my graph? Should I check shallows first and then move to outside the edges, or do it in reverse? Jay, basically what we talked about earlier. Give me your read. I'm leaning on you.
My read in the summer is outside edges are more key for when I've been fishing. It's just like normally I'm fishing late morning, early afternoon. That's when I've been able to get out. And I'm not fishing early mornings, and I'm not fishing low light period at night.
Which is, so, Jay, number one, to get up in the morning, Jay's got to be sober enough. B, you can't gamble in the middle of the day. You know, he's got to be in these bookies. So it's like drinking all night and, you know, gambling all night. So it only leaves you a few hours there in the middle, really.
Yeah.
No.
So that's
you've got to make a read on the conditions, right? We've got to look at things as a whole. If we're saying prime conditions, or, you know, it's cloudy, it looks money, let's focus on that shallow stuff before we focus on the outside edge. If you go out and it's high, bright sun, dead flat, calm, or nasty, let's start on the outside and work our way in, right? What's the most logical pattern we could be on, right? If conditions, quote unquote, suck, generally outside edge is going to be better. If it's absolute, like, whoa, this is, it's just a little drizzle, Jay, and it's cloudy and it's perfect, don't waste your time on the outside edge. Connor, I need a new reel as my Daiwa took a dump on me. Should I buy another Daiwa as I like the frame size and the weight, or would a Tranks or an Abu Garcia be a good replacement? Jay, yet again.
Well, stick with what you like. I mean, they weren't built to fail. So, I mean, and if they do, they're going to stand behind them and, you know, fix it or replace it for you. So I'd look at, number one, returning it to the manufacturer as soon as possible and ask them, you know, if it's in warranty. I think most reels are 1 year. So,
well, that's the thing. It could be, you know, there's no context. It could be the first generation Alexa. Who knows?
Yeah, we don't know exactly what model it is, but sure. I mean, it's like with line, you know, I don't think anyone has line failure. That's just extremely uncommon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you like something like PowerPro, why are you searching for the next greatest thing? You know, right. if you love MasterBraid, I use Cortland MasterBraid primarily. It's just, I'm not too keen on trying something new. The stuff's great.
But yeah, if you dig it, you dig it. I mean, every reel has a lifespan. That's an interesting thing.
Yes. No, that's true. No, that's very true. Go ahead.
Something that never comes up. I'm looking at the shelf. I have like these industrial shelves in the bait cave here. And I'm looking at 40 super reel boxes on my top shelf, right? 40. Daiwa, Tranks, Abu Garcia, you name it. I would say 10 of them are fished out, right? I know guiding, fishing for muskies every day, 7 days a week, I'm pretty much at trashed reel in 3 to 4 months. Now, I'm talking 7 to 10 hours a day. This is what I do, client or no client. Holy obsessed, Jay, you know it. What I call you every day. Hey, Jay, what are you doing? Not much. What's going on? Nothing. We got some maps. What are you doing? Head of the boat ramp. Is that not every day? Is that an accurate depiction of our mornings?
Of my overall tone?
Not your tone of what I'm doing.
Yeah. Not much.
We
got a bunch of stuff in.
Here's Jay. What are you doing, Jay?
I'm working.
What are you doing? I'm headed to the bedroom. That's you.
Over here drinking sucker water.
Yeah, well, that's not true.
Freaking out.
I'm over here eating the lead jig heads.
Back to what you were saying earlier about every reel having a shelf life, though. Now, and that's that determination.
Not shelf life, service life.
Service life, yeah, the life of the reel, the life expectancy is expired. It's like more than one part has simply just worn out.
Taking
now, if there's
the
a defect,
shit.
It's usually one thing, like some kind of anti-reverse bearing goes or something.
Defects
right?
happen soon.
Correct.
If you got a faulty part, it's like, oh crap, your third trip, and you're like, dude, done.
Yeah.
But once you, it's a weird deal where you wear a reel out and there's no way you could be like, this reel broke. Now you go, I killed it. Probably the biggest trophy I have in the bait cave is having a Boo Garcia Revo where my thumb wore through the plastic, literally. Like, there's a hole in the plastic from just touching it, not rubbing on it, and just, and I went, that thing lasted longer than any reel I've had. So, what, you know, if you're making a move and it's something that never gets talked about, what is the shelf life of a reel? 3, 4, 6 months? 7 days? I mean, there's a lot of hours. Because I typically will fish, a slow month for me is 25 days of muskie fishing day. That's why I brought up, I call you every freaking day. What are you doing? I'll be like, hey, Jay, what are you doing? Jay's like, I'm headed to the lake. And you'll be like, I don't even know why I call you, Jay. You just make that sound. It's weird. Stop doing it. What'd you have for lunch, Jay?
No time to eat. That's what I usually say.
Me eat.
So, I'll eat when I'm dead. I often, that's an answer I usually give too.
Right. Jay, get your head out of the sucker tank.
Eating's for wimps.
Eating.
I've said that too many times.
Right. Anyway. But
yeah.
With the amount of, you know what? It's something I need to log. Something I've never done when I do all these spreadsheets and everything is like, when I crack a new reel and I put on the rod, I need to start looking at it. You know what? That's like legitimate. Like, what's the failure rate? Where I would say the lowest failure rate for me, just thinking about this, looking at the shelf full of reels, the lowest failure rate I have is a Kuma and Shimano. Not shilling for a particular brand, but I have yet to break a Tranks. I've worn them down to where they feel weird.
And they're not as smooth as they once were. But they still function.
I think smooth is
interesting.
Smooth is a sucky word, right? Like if you fish hard, like I've got reels that sound like I'm ratcheting my boat on. Right? They're just making sound. It is what it is. But you know, I hear that. Like that's the. Everyone that picks up a reel, Jay, people walk into a store, it's like they'll walk into a guitar center and they'll pick a guitar. That sounds great. No, it doesn't. You've never plugged it up. You have no basis of comparison. It's just a Fender Telecaster like the other 40 million made, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where with reels, they go, that's smooth. That's like the knee-jerk reaction of like the lowest bar of what a reel could be. And I would bet, I will never design a reel. That's way above my pay grade. But I would guarantee some engineer is going, how do I make this reel as quiet as possible on first grab? Right? First grab. They're packed with grease for number one. Like every new reel you get, they are gunked up. They're full of grease. If you don't believe me, buy a new reel, take it apart before you throw it. It is full of blue grease, right? Typically, this very tacky stuff that will not, disperse with water. Well, after a while, with line bleed, with a little bit of spittle from your line,
heat.
And the elements and heat, the grease is gone. You go, where did the grease go? It just seeps out in small increments. And then you have brass on brass or stainless on stainless, and the reel is not quote unquote smooth. If a gear set is toothed properly, meaning the teeth are properly aligned and it's packed full of grease, guess what every reel is, Jay? Smooth. So I always look at durability, right? When I kind of get off of a reel, is when it's just annoying. I know that sounds stupid, but I'm just like in real time going, when I check out on a rail gun, oh my God, that thing just sounds like I'm grinding peanuts at Trader Joe's. I'm making my own peanut butter. That's when I'm out. You can usually tell that a super reel is done, you know, from the fact you get to lubricate it and the paw is weird. And I think that's like the number one thing where I'm like, when I'm done with a reel, if I've worn out one or two paws, PAWL, mm-hmm. which is the line guide, the worm gear. I don't know of a super reel that has anything outside of a stainless steel worm gear, right? So the worm gear is what moves your line gatherer left to right. And then you have the main drive gear that translates into the spool, right? So you get a gear set there. Typically the paw will wear out first, followed by the main drive gear. Sometimes you can get two paws out of a reel. Once you've got two worn out, typically the main drive gear is starting to get less than premium, right? So paws, number one, that wears out. Number two is your anti-reverse bearing. And Jay, you kind of said that. That was a major factor when we were in round reels. Right. So a
boot. Oh, it sure was. Yeah. It wasn't that long ago where that was an issue all the time.
So I actually have two sockets. I can see them here. They're in a plastic sandwich bag hanging on my workbench that are meant to knock out and replace anti-reverse bearings.
No, really? Okay.
Yep. So there was a tool Abu made, or you could use like the perfect, I can't remember what size sockets they are. I could go over and grab them. You could use a socket to knock it out and then another socket to knock it in with like a ball peen hammer on the side plate to get that entry. They call it a clutch dog or entry reverse mm-hmm. to work. Now, what's interesting in most super reels, they use a very, let me back it up. An Abu Garcia reel had a clutch dog that was like roller bearings, right? So if you can imagine like trailer bearings, they would only go in one way. Mm-hmm. So they'd only turn forward. So as you reel the reel towards the water, that bearing can only go that direction, meaning the handle could only turn that direction. A lot of your super reels use a spring-loaded clutch dog that hits a cog that is behind the main drive bearing. When that clutch dog wears out, now your handle will turn backwards, right? And the clutch dog in these modern reels are typically a stainless or a brass clutch dog with these two little slivers of whether it be brass, whether it be stainless steel on the side that kind of cope around the sides of a cog, right? Inside the reel.
Mm-hmm.
And when those two little feathers, these two little fingers that grab the sides of that cog wear out, your anti-reverse goes up. Because now the clutch dog's not lined up properly and it's kind of misaligned and not grabbing. So your paw's number one, your clutch dog's number two. I've never had a reel, Jay, where a bearing went out. Have you? Where like, just a straight out bearing burnt up.
A long time ago on, like you said before, round reel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some old stuff. Yeah. Somebody had a line of reels. I don't even want to, even if I could remember which exact model it was on it, I shouldn't bring it up and I won't.
Yeah.
But, problematic. You know, this is going back 15 years or something like that. And it was a popular reel. So a lot of people were using it and the bearings kept going out on these things.
Bearing after bearing after bearing.
Gosh. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a thing of the past. You just don't hear that happening anymore with the way they're designing these things and the way they operate. It's great.
So
they hold up really well.
I'm going to average this out. 6 times 25 is 150 times 6. 900 hours. So if we average out a month of me guiding and fishing, do it again, right? So let's do 25. 25 days at minimum 6 hours times six is 150 hours a month on the water, right? Times 6 months, 900 hours. That seems to be the typical shelf life for a reel. Like I've had really good luck as of late with like the Daiwa, was it TW, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say I'm on my, I know it's not, I would say I'm on my second TW and I'm on my second Pro Rex this year. And my Pro Rex is now starting to get a little, a little gimpy, right?
Okay.
The only, like I said, the only reels I've not had that happen where I just go, I'm done with this thing because it just doesn't feel right, or Shimano's. Anyway, down in a hole, Jay.
Down in a hole.
Sam, what's your tips on night trolling? Love the podcast. Meow. Night trolling.
Ooh.
Night fishing is a game of slow and big, just like Jay likes them. If I'm trolling at night, I'm going with the biggest. Jay is looking for the slowest and the biggest at the end of the night, aren't you, every night? It's like last sure. call and Jay's creeping around. Ha ha! Making that call. Ha ha! Anyway.
Uh-huh.
Big baits that run well at slow speeds. 12-inch headlocks, trolling girls, double tens. I've done very well with the Booker Bigfoot. It's not something we talk about a lot because casting the Booker Bigfoot double tens is a exercise in torture at times. Baits that have a lot of lift. I want baits that run moderately shallow for their class. Not that they run shallow overall, but like, you know, Colorado double tens will run slightly deeper than the Bigfoot Booker, where I want the most thump, a dark profile, and I want something that is really, really, really active at a slow speed, right? So I said supernatural, I said headlocks, I'm lying, matlocks. So 12-inch matlocks, 10-inch matlocks, right? They have a bigger wobble, a fatter profile, a bigger thump at slower speeds. So I want to go slow and I want to go big at night when I'm trolling. That allows muskies to dial in. It allows them to catch up, right? Numerous times have I been night trolling, have I heard whoosh? I've heard misses while trolling because you're going, you know, three. You know, and with a four stroke, you'll hear the miss and you'll hear the drag rip. Right? You don't want to be going fast night trolling. You don't want to be making too much commotion. You might get a muskie to fall and he goes, where is it? What is it? Whatever. Blah, 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 blah. You know, numerous times, like I said, I'll hear, you know, 10 seconds later, I got the hook up because he caught up to it. My other thing with night trolling is chartreuse, black, or glow. That's it. You need three colors, and you need a lot more black than you need the other two. That's it. Mm-hmm. Glow is one of those things like glowing colors or UV colors. They don't work everywhere. It's kind of too unnatural, I think, at times. In certain bodies, why do they love glowy stuff or they love odd stuff? But I'm going to avoid that, like the plague in clear water or very natural waters. Kristen, I'm a solo female kayak angler, and I struggle with getting muskies out of the net. They keep rolling up in the net that I have. I feel like I'm hurting them, especially as a kayak angler, because it takes me so long to get them out of the net. What are your tips? What net recommendation do you have that is light enough for a female solo kayak angler, but will keep muskies from getting rolled up? Salutations from Milwaukee. Jay, what is a good light net? Things that suck in musky fishing is like really tight weaves. We need light and we need kayakable.
I'd probably go with a Stowmaster because it's a folding net.
Yeah, that bag is small mesh, though.
Well, they have different versions, though. Let me look here. They've got one with wider. See, you want to go with a wider mesh, but you don't want to go with that super heavy one because there's it's just
yeah, you there's need more weight, between,
there's more
yeah.
drag. You need them. You know. Let me see if this is the one right here.
Get a gaff.
116.
Get a gaff. Get a gaff. Sorry. Gaff.
The 94 size Stowmaster would be great for a kayak, and it's a big enough net for, you know, for even big muskies. They make one size larger net, but it is a big net. You know, it's like 40 inches across. You got to keep this thing somewhat compact, and just the folding. These things are very strong. We're selling a ton of Stowmasters. That's like the new
the hype
hot thing to net. Have. Yeah, I mean, the 94 IM... it's called.
Mm-hmm.
It's not overly deep. If you have a super long bag too, and it's fairly lightweight, yeah, they can wrap up in that, and then you got more what harm than good going on to the muskie trying to, you know, you're overhandling it.
Now,
so
now I've never been a fan of them as far as like guiding this conservation, like the plastic nets. You know what I'm talking about? Like the flat, like the clear plastic ones, they still make those bags.
Flat, clear plastic nets. Who made them?
That, no, this is like Frabel had them for a minute. It was like
Frabel
this weird
had them?
I don't think so. They had this weird conservation, like flattish thing. Yeah, like you said, the Stowmaster, if the bag, the problem is the Stowmaster, those bags tear up pretty good quickly. You might be able to get away with the Stowmaster with like a Frabel big game bag, right? And switch that out, or a Ranger bag. Yeah, I mean, that's the trick. I mean, some muskies just flip out. And
yeah,
reversing them out is a bit of a skill. I can think of a fish this week. Well, he rolled up in it, and guess what I did immediately? I grabbed my hook cutters and just started cutting hooks. Right? I got 1 point in the fish. I've got theoretically 8 other points in the net. Just start cutting. You know, cut a hook, save a muskie. Just cut the points as quick as you can. Be done with it. That's going to save you a lot of wear and tear. Especially for like a solo female angler out of a kayak, get the Nipex. I'd say that having good cutters is better than, more important than a good net or a wide gap net, because those good cutters with a single hand thing, you can pop yeah. through those. And I'm yeah. talking, I'm shearing through 7-aught treble hooks like nothing. I promise you can do it when you have the spring loaded Nipex. Right, get mm-hmm. the fish next to you if he's rolled up. Start cutting until he unfurls. Right? Something that's overlooked often to get the bait out of the equation is just cut the freaking split rings or cut the top of the eye. Often that's helpful. Right? So we're like, okay, get the bait out. And we go, he's got one hook in his head, and now he's picked up a random one in his, you know, his back. It happens.
Yeah, it does.
You know, I mean, you'll end up hooking a fish in the face, and he's got one on the top of his head and one in his mouth. And you go, okay, let's cut the split rings to just get the hard bait or the soft bait out of the equation. And we go, okay, he's got 1 point in his mouth, and he's got 1 point in his head. Grab your long-nosed pliers, pull one out of his head. Check. Next, we got 1 point in the mouth. Cut away as much metal as you can. And now we just grab a hold of that with our pliers, because the more points off of a treble we can get rid of, the less he can be like wrapped up, you know, and it's a case by case basis. Sometimes it's a nightmare. Sometimes they're like, oh, this is easy. You just deal with it is deal with what it is. Roger, I know like, excuse me. I know you like the spinner baits that bear your name, obviously, Exclamation point. But how can you say they're better than other brands? Wow. Passive aggressive much, Jay?
Well, they're different.
I never said they're better. Never said they're better. I grew up on Grim Reapers, made out of Kentucky, threw the crap out of those, Dick Pearson's. Obviously, I've got more slop masters than a man can shake a stick at. The spinnerbaits that bear Steve's name, Steve's Meat Grinder, Steve's Tailgater, are modifications I've done to the spinnerbait platform that stand out a little bit and help me with my guiding and make it easier. So spinnerbait's a spinnerbait. In the right hands, all of them are deadly. I'm trying to make spinnerbaits that take the work out of them. That'd be my take. I mean, we got a video coming out here very shortly on spinnerbait stuff, but no, I mean, can you do the same things with a Booker Slopmaster or a Grim Reaper or a Rad Dog or a Dick Pearson's Grinder or Jay, whatever their spinnerbaits are? They're, my goodness, Ace Bait.
Yeah.
You can do it all. I've caught a blue billion muskies on Ace Bait. Frickin' neighbor Steve caught his personal best on Ace Bait this week.
Yep.
It's tactics. It's application. Right? It's back to, you know, if you put a freaking, you know, a Midwestern housewife behind the driver's seat of a NASCAR, she's not going to win a race, Jay. Very doubtful.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, the new quarterback for the Green Bay Packers is Helen Munchkin. Helen's taking the field here. Helen is a third-grade teacher from Molsonine.
Mequon.
Yeah.
Macusa.
Right. She's from Macusa, class of 70. She's going to get greased, right? It's the skill of what you're doing. So give me an Ace Bait. I can do the Steve Meat Grinder routine with it. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, gussy it up, cut the blades off. Everything I've done spinnerbait wise started and ended with the Joe Booker Slop Master platform, right? I've actually told him that. We've talked about it. I said, hey, man, I'm doing some mods. I'm doing the figure eight thing. It's a little different. He's like, oh, okay, you do you, boo. You know, whatever. So, yeah, but the spinnerbaits I work with, they're not better. And I guess he's referring to last week's episode. It's not that they're like drastically different. They're more dialed in for what I do, and they're more dialed in to help you achieve your goals quicker for certain situations. But a spinnerbait's a spinnerbait. I mean, if you know what you're doing with spinnerbaits, man, you're going to rock ass no matter what brand you have. Seth, sup, dudes. When should I focus on AM bites versus PM bites? I'm single, I'm ready to mingle, and I want to catch more muskies. Oh, my God. Dang.
Seth.
He says, love the podcast. Keep on rocking in the free world. Man, these people are lit today, Jay. I can fish mornings. I can fish evenings. What do I focus on?
Kind of depends on where you're going. Now, there's a lot of lakes in the Northwoods. There's a lot of lakes in metropolitan areas that evenings are just a nightmare. And mornings are awesome. But the only problem is mornings is like you got to be on the water at 5:20
mm-hmm.
to capitalize that first hour and a half before it starts to get busy or before the light gets high enough, you know, to start affecting things. But
I mean, you can be hyper effective on, and I've always thought this, clear water is really good in the morning a lot of time, right? That's not like transcendent for everybody while it's clear, but a lot of times clear bodies of water, you can get a really good morning bite. Once the sun's over the trees or once it's hitting the water, you're done, right? Where, you know, if you can do both, do it. But that's a grinder, dude. Back to guiding. Like some of the most miserable days ever. Like, okay, we're going to fish 3 hours in the morning and 5 hours in the evening. You want to feel crazy is run that for 2 months, right? I'm up at 5 and I'm back in bed at 10 a.m. You know, I'm back up. You know what I'm saying? You're like, what month is it? It's a tough schedule to adhere to. It feels like your circadian rhythms are just gone and you're just a zombie. what I would look at, Seth, if I got to make a determination between AM, PM bites, let's look at majors, minors, number one, right? Well, not number one. Let's look at weather patterns, number one, followed by majors and minors, right? So there's a lot of times in the summer, dude, like it starts warming up, the sun creeps up, and guess what they're predicting? Rain or something of that early. If I got early showers, if I've got prefrontal in the morning, I want to be there. Opposed to the AM sunset lead up, right? So you've got early morning rain, be there. If you've got late afternoon with no rain, but you had rain in the morning, it's often sucks. So you got to weigh those options. So weather's your number one factor, followed by majors, minors, what's happening. Typically, in the shallow zone, you can find a bite in the morning or the evening. But like I said, weight them with weather and weight them with majors and minors, especially during peak summer. Jay, what else do you think factors in there? What are you thinking?
Maybe time of the year. Sometimes in the Northwoods around here, Bayless County, et cetera.
Yeah, early, yeah.
You almost have to get to peak water temps in the summer. You know, you always have the summer pattern going before the mornings. It's kind of like developing a night bite. You know, there are years where a night bite around here isn't necessarily that great for the entire summer. You know, a lot of people are waiting for it, and they try it. It's just like, you know, it didn't develop due to different things coming together, like extraordinarily late ice out, you know, and wheat growth is different. You know, water temps didn't start to hit, you know, the 70s. You know, it was 2 weeks later than it should have. All these factors seem to probably contribute to a poor night bite. I don't know, which is back to, the morning bite. This week, I was hearing from more than multiple sources, let's put it that way, that there is this swim bait bite over deep weed lines midday, mid-afternoon, I should say. Heat of the day kind of deal, right, where the mornings weren't that great, and not even early mornings, just mornings in general, right? It's just like we're still looking at that. It's kind of like still spring, you know what I mean?
Right, which is the water temp.
I've complained
thing,
before.
Yeah.
It's just like our water temps have been relatively stable for like a month. They really haven't gained that much. It's kind of strange, but we've had a lot of fairly cool weather, so that contributes to that. So, anyway. Morning bites, you know, early, if you're going to really concentrate on it, let's say you're taking a week and a half off or something, you're traveling somewhere to concentrate, you know, on that up here, you know, in the northern region, Minnesota, Wisconsin, it might be a more solid thing to bet on in June going for the night bite. But once July hits, the morning bite could be extremely productive under the right conditions.
What about the?
Would you agree?
Well, it just depends. I mean,
well, there's so many. Obviously, there's a lot of factors, but I mean, if you had to like roll the dice and go, okay, I'm going to concentrate on morning bites in June, I would say no. Do the evening bite.
Right, do the
evening bite. Once July comes, you know, should be in a summer pattern wherever you are, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you've been in the Northwest, but it's been one of these deals where it's like, okay, you're getting some warm up in the middle of the day, but the temps are dropping overnight. Like literally yesterday I was talking to you and you went, boo. And I went, what's going on? You went, ugh. You were like, it's frigid out. It was in the 50s, right? You're getting off the water and going, it's cold.
Oh yeah, last weekend. Yeah, I think it was last weekend. Yeah, it was brutal. High of 54 last Sunday.
You need not this giant disparagement. So the only time I'm thinking mornings is once we get into like, okay, it's not gonna knock down shallow temperatures that much. Once we're into like, okay, cool. You know, if it's say it's 75 when you get off in the evening, and it could be 70 degrees in the morning, your money. But when it's like the superficial surface temperature might hit 75, but your trolling motor on the head of the trolling motor is reading 60. Come on. You know what I'm saying? Let's let it warm up first before I'm focused on that morning bite as a dominant factor in my fishing. You know, I think we're both going the same way there, where it's like it's the never-ending spring right now. Slow, 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 slow. But if we have a warm year, man, sometimes the morning bites just dynamite, JJ.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
So it's kind of a personal read or a body of water read where, you know, a tannic body of water might be more forgiving, whereas clear water is going to be a little bit more fluctuating, I guess, more so than anything. But anyway, Jay, we've covered some Q&A here. We've talked about all kinds of goofy stuff. We've talked about pseudo-guiding. Talk about your upcoming charges and your involvement on the dumpster gift card of destiny.
Well, as everybody knows, I've been investigating this almost exclusively since, you know, I think that story broke, you said the other day, you know, like it was a couple months ago. I think it was last fall.
Oh, it's been forever. They're going to have an arrangement.
When that story broke. Yeah. So the arrangement is coming down. Okay.
Yeah.
What we need to do is get the Muskie 360 helicopter to fly some of our crew over there to cover it. The media.
Listen,
you know,
I want to know what happened. This guy stole a Menards gift card out of a dumpster.
Yeah, his name's Alan.
It's the greatest story ever. Anyway, Jay Bird, say goodnight.
Thank you, guys. Good night.
Later. Bye-bye.